Good morning, and
Good
thank you
morning.
for being willing to participate remotely. And even though we're not in the Judicial Center, the same rules do apply to this proceeding as they would if we were in the Judicial Center. The proceedings are being recorded. The audio is being recorded, so please state your name and the party you represent before you begin. And I also like to tell people that we understand that there are certain interruptions, pets, family members, doorbells, those sorts of things that can happen. So we appreciate it if you're able to keep them to a minimum. We'll try to do the same on our end, but we understand that these things do happen. If for any reason you're not able to hear us or see us, please let us know. We'll make sure to accommodate that. If we have to add time, we'll add time. So you shouldn't feel any pressure. If there's a technology problem, we'll be sure to work around it. And with that, Ms. Moberg, you may begin.
Thanks so much. And good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Joni Moberg, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Catherine Blair. I come before the court today on Ms. Blair's behalf, asking the court to vacate language the district court added to the party's stipulated judgment and decree on a sua sponte basis and over Ms. Blair's objection. That language imposes a residency restriction on Ms. Blair only by prohibiting her from moving to any location outside of the children's school district. If she wants to move, she must first schedule a motion hearing prior to the move for the purpose of reviewing the quote, ongoing appropriateness of future joint physical custody, unquote. And the district court specifically precluded the parties from agreeing to a move without judicial intervention. I want to acknowledge the standard of review. The district court has broad discretion in custody matters, and this court may only reverse custody decisions if the district court abused its discretion by making findings that were unsupported by the evidence or by improperly applying the law. The appellant submits that both of those criteria are met here and that the district court abused its discretion. As an initial matter, I also want to make it clear that I'm asking the court to vacate this language, but I'm also asking this court to make that a precedential decision. Under the new rules, precedential decisions, as you're aware, are appropriate if the decision, quote, resolves a significant or reoccurring issue or involves an atypical factual record or procedural history. Both of these criteria apply here. Having practiced family law for over 20 years now, I'm confident that this is an atypical factual record. Until this case, I have never been compelled to have a trial when there were no disagreements between the parties. The parties were excused from appellate mediations in mediation in this case because it was clear that they could come to an agreement, but that the district court judge wouldn't sign it. This is extraordinary because usually in my experiences, when parties are able to amicably work together through the disputes in their case, come to an agreement without the assistance of a mediator and just have an attorney draft it up, they're congratulated, but that's not what happened here. This case also involves a significant and recurring issue. The district court judge, through staff in this case, said that this judge usually requires that parties who want to share joint physical custody live in the same school district and that they agree to do so until their children emancipate. The judge also refused to sign a stipulated decree without the language that he was requiring, even though he hadn't gathered any information about the facts of the case, making it clear that this is a judicial view that he has and not just as an issue that was distinct to this case.
If I'm understanding your argument, if there had been some evidence in the record that the stipulation was not in the children's best interest, then the district court would have been able to, within its discretion, add the language?
I agree with that, Your Honor. And we've cited case law that generally disfavors residency restrictions, but has a strict requirement that when there's a residency restriction, the court has to make specific findings. What was unique in this case was that the court, even though a default hearing was required, the court was refusing to sign off on the decree before it had that default hearing and asked the parties any questions. If the judge had asked the parties questions and there was justification for a residential restriction, it is my understanding of the law that that would be appropriate. However, there isn't anything in the record here to support that a residential restriction is necessary. Neither of the parties announced any immediate intention to move. That's different from the Scheisel case, an unpublished opinion that we cited, because in that case, that issue was actually presented. The mom in that case was wanting to move from Mankato to Lakeville. Here, the parties haven't announced any intention to move, so the issue isn't ripe. Even if they did want to move, there's no suggestion that these parties have difficulty coming to agreement, that a move just on the other side of a school district line would not be in the children's best interests, and that the parties are unable to cooperate to make sound decisions for their children. Here, the district court at the—
Ms. Moberg, if I could jump in with— I hope that you're going to address what you think our syllabus point should be if we do make this precedential, because it seems like this could be a very narrow opinion. It narrowly addressing the language in this case and whether this language was supported by the record in this case, or it could be something broader relating to residency requirements, or even broader than that, relating to what authority a district court has when presented with a stipulated J&D, what authority does a district court have to step in? And there are times, as I know you know, when there may be concerns about coercive control issues in a relationship, or there may be, you look at, you know, the news about the Chauvin divorce, and initially the district court judge didn't want to accept that stipulation because it seemed like it wasn't fair, right? So when, and so this syllabus point that we would be articulating if we publish could be so broad as to address the limitations on the judge's authority to accept or reject a stipulation, or it could be more narrow regarding residency requirements, or it could be an unpublished case that just specifically addresses the language used in this case, given the record in this case.
I agree with the points you made, Your Honor. I wholeheartedly endorse the understanding that under the law, judges have a very important responsibility to independently gauge the fairness of the decisions that are being presented. They should in no way be a rubber stamp. It's a discussion I had with the district court judge in this case. And I think there's a special obligation, a heightened obligation to look out for the interests of children who are otherwise unrepresented in the proceeding. The Daly v. Schirmach case that we cited, which is 709 Northwest 2nd, 626, probably does the best job of exploring the legal standard for this. It simply states that there's this requirement that if there is a geographical restriction, it must be accompanied by specific findings about the best interests of the children, and then the best interest factors are specifically spelled out in statute. So I think that would be the analysis a district court would have to go through if it's going to apply a residency restriction.
Counsel, I'm glad you brought up the Daly decision. And I guess I don't want to take too much of your argument time discussing a possible syllabus point, but I do want to probe, because you're a family law attorney and I think have experience that could help this court, or at least help me. So how different is this case from the Daly case? I mean, hasn't this issue already been resolved? I mean, that's effectively what you argue in your brief, and that the district court made a misstep that was clear on the law. And so what would a precedential decision add? So if you could hone in on that, thank you.
I don't know that the law needs to be clarified. Certainly there could be some clarification of what does it mean to make findings that are in the children's best interest. Here, I think the important points that are lacking, let me say this in a clearer way instead of a few double negatives. The district court here could have found that these parties had difficulty communicating and making decisions. That could have weighed in favor of a residency restriction. I think the issue needs to be ripe. The issue here wasn't ripe. No one was asking to move. It was something that the district court imposed. I think that is a really important point here, that district court judges can't overstep their bounds and go beyond what the law is and impose what they think the law should be. Instead, there is a favor. The court favors people coming to agreements. And here the parties did that, but the district court judge clearly and repeatedly said, I won't do it unless this is there, but the things he was imposing were not the law. And I think a clear message from this court that district court judges need to apply the law as it is and not the law as they feel it should be. And then taking it a step further to your point, the findings that were lacking here were that there wasn't an actual request to move. So the court didn't have the ability to do a best interest analysis because specific facts weren't being presented. Why is a move happening? How far is the move? Can the parties cooperatively co-parent with this distance? Unlike in the Scheisel case where the court knew the mom wants to move from Mankato to Lakeville. Here's the parenting schedule that's being followed. That can't continue. It's important. And we can't craft a new parenting schedule that meets the children's best interests. Are the transportation requirements of this move going to work? Do the parties have the ability to cooperate sufficiently so that they can coordinate the new demands that are met by this move? I think those are the kinds of questions that should be asked. And if answered in a right way, then a geographic restriction could appropriately apply.
Okay, I think I understand your point in terms of what's different between this case and the Daily case. So that's helpful. I want to make sure that I do understand all of the relief that you're seeking. You were pretty clear, I thought, in your opening remarks saying that you're looking for this court to vacate the residential restriction, which I think you would probably agree with me is the language that the district court added in the footnote added to conclusion of law number two. Am I tracking
that's correctly? Correct.
Okay. And that's that part that says basically that the award of legal and physical custody is conditioned on the mother living in this ISD, the school district 833. And if the mother moves, she has to schedule a hearing. Is that the only relief you're seeking?
I think it would be appropriate. That's the most important relief, to vacate that. I honestly think that every single thing the district court added is not supported by the record and could all be vacated. But as a practical matter, Ms. Blair just wants to make sure that she is not going forward with that legal conclusion of law order in her decree. But to be clear, nothing that the district court added was appropriate or supported by the record, and ideally would all be vacated.
Well, the reason I ask is because, you know, there is one way of reading it, and I thought that's the way you brief argued it, reading the district court's decision, that says that the judge also included a school district restriction. I see those as two different things. There's a residential restriction on the mother. We've just talked about that. And then arguably there's a school district restriction, but it's a little bit different because the school district restriction, there are a couple of ways it's different. You could probably tell me some yourself, but one is that this is something that the parties agreed upon. The district court during the trial specifically put that to the parties, and they separately testified that they agreed to keep their children in ISD 833 going forward post-decree. And so that language is in the judgment and decree, and it sounds like you're not challenging it.
I want to make sure I understand you correctly, and if I misunderstood, let me just clarify. The parties do currently agree that their children are attending this school. Our position is that going forward, joint legal custody means that they can't change schools unless they agree or the court order otherwise. And that's what should be in the judgment and decree.
Yes, well, and I think, and that's what I'm trying to probe, is how much you think the district court changed that. I mean, the district court obviously kept the joint legal custody the same. The clause we talked about, the residential restriction only goes to physical custody, correct? That's how I read it.
I agree with that. But okay. To the extent that the court modified the party's agreement as it relates to school choice, that should be vacated too, because their agreement is consistent with law, which is that they share joint legal custody. They obviously agree where the kids currently go to school, but if they agree that the school should change, they should be able to do that without any judicial oversight. And then legal custody means that if they do have problems, they would follow their mediation clause and then go to court if necessary.
Well, do you see language in the judgment decree that restricts the party's joint legal custody? As I looked for it, I was trying to find it and I didn't see it, but your brief implied it. And that's why I'm asking you this question. I need to know what relief you're seeking. I'm not going to make it up for you.
I think legal custody, as you know, is defined as major decisions that usually relates to school choice, medical decisions, and religion decisions. But that doesn't mean it's all that it relates to. So to the extent that legal custody implicates these parties' ability to come to decision on where they move and what's best for their kids and where school has changed, then the district court arguably overstepped its bounds by infringing on that with this geographical restriction.
You mentioned the dispute resolution process. It does appear to me that there's a separate process in footnote one for joint physical custody, that there's somehow, it doesn't appear that there's a final decision on physical custody, because there's this automatic review hearing that has to happen in the future. So my question is, do you agree that that is very different from the paragraph 26 process on page 18 regarding resolution of conflict?
I do, because what the judge has done in that footnote is remove the party's ability to come to agreement on this issue. Regardless of whether they agree on this issue, the judge has said, you have to come to me and I'm going to decide whether it's still appropriate for joint physical custody to be in place, which, as we discussed in our brief, is not the legal standard for review.
And then on page 11 of the decree, this is paragraph D, or 2D, and then the letter B. At the very end of that paragraph regarding school choice, the sentence has this additional five words, and I want to make sure that I understand this is also part of what your request is to vacate. The last sentence is, the parties agree that the children will continue to attend school in this district and specific school zone. Then it says, comma, or as this court orders. And the question I have is that last phrase, or as this court orders, that could be interpreted as removing the parents' ability to agree to a school choice change, a legal custody change that would also be inconsistent with the dispute resolution provisions, as well as what the parties initially proposed. So are you also asking to vacate that phrase or to
Yes.
strike that phrase?
Yes, for the reasons that you just alluded to, Your Honor. The parties, and that language was inserted in an effort to address this judge's concerns, to make it clear that the parties understand that they can't make this decision without, that they couldn't change the children's school without the other party agreeing, and the court has removed their ability to do that without the judge saying that the judge blesses it, so to speak. And I believe that oversteps the judge's bounds and interferes with their joint legal custody. It interferes with the mediation clause, which is typically embraced and applauded by judges rather than disregarded.
Okay, if you want to close, I see that you're out of your initial period of time. Now you would, I guess, technically still have additional time here, but go ahead.
If you don't mind, Judge Brian, I'll ask one more question just to make sure I'm clear. I noted that you were very specific in your brief and in your comments that you seek vacature of these provisions. You don't seek a remand. I'm just concerned that if there isn't a remand, and I'm just going to go from your premise that we shouldn't give the judge a chance to do what was done in some of the other decisions and make best interest findings in support, and for the reasons I think you've already articulated. But if there isn't a remand, is it really clear, given the partial, the differences, I guess I would say, between this, the final judgment and decree, and the stipulated judgment and decree? I mean, if we simply slice out the language by vacating it that you've identified, the additional language, you aren't left with the agreement that you had, are you? And doesn't that cause a problem?
I think if you remove that the language that the district court inserted, and just what remains is the party's original stipulated judgment and decree, that is what we're asking for. To be frank, Your Honor, I have concerns that this judge has a bias that the law isn't what this judge wants the law to be. And we litigated this issue despite the agreement between the parties. As you could see from the record, there were extensive discussions between me and the district court judge at the default hearing. And then he had a chance to elicit his own testimony at trial. and it was geared towards his view of the law. There is nothing in this record to suggest that there's a basis for a geographical restriction, and therefore there's no reason to remand. And I'll close briefly, Your Honor. Minnesota statutes define physical custody as the day-to-day caretaking of the children. Nothing in the statute supports a geographical restriction as a precondition for joint physical custody. This is an opportunity for this court to reiterate the language that was in the Scheisel unpublished opinion. In family law, we generally think that the physical custody label isn't particularly meaningful after child support and move out of state legislative changes. So parents can share physical custody and live an hour apart. They can share physical custody and one party, it doesn't have to be an equal parenting schedule. And so to have a blanket decision by this district court judge that he will never sign off on a joint physical custody label if there isn't a geographical restriction is improper. Here, the parties have demonstrated an ability to cooperate. Their move to Minnesota was fairly recent. Their current school district was fairly recent. They don't have intentions to change, but they might have to. Appellant specifically testified that if there was an issue about the kids changing schools, she expected that she and her ex-husband would be able to agree on it. She pointed out the mediation clause. She pointed out their success in coming to an agreement. But despite that testimony, the court supplanted these parents' judgment about their children with his own judgment about what the law should say. There's a host of problems. The issue wasn't ripe for the court's consideration. There's disparate treatment between the parties because this condition really disproportionately impacts and arguably only applies to Ms. Blair. And it announces a standard of modification for custody that's simply inconsistent with Minnesota statutes. So in conclusion, I'm asking this court to vacate the language that was added throughout the decree by the district court judge and to do so in a precedential decision. If it is an unprecedented decision, my concern is that district court judges and this district court judge in particular could decline to follow this in other cases and continue what is clearly a broad practice by this judge that is been disadvantageous to these litigants as well as other litigants. It's truly unfortunate, Your Honors, that when two parties, one of whom doesn't have a lawyer, came to an agreement and should have in any other case had that agreement congratulated and easily moved through the judicial system, that my client has found herself having a trial and an appeal on this issue. And I'm asking for this court's help to fix this for this party and for other parties as well. And with that, I have nothing further unless any of you have more questions for me.
Thanks.
Well, thank you very much. We will take the matter under advisement and issue an opinion within the statutory timeframe.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. Have a good day.